Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650, Friday edition of the show. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drantz. We're live from the Kintech studio. 650. It's the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors. For over 50 years, visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. And we got an open segment here, so you can send in your thoughts or questions about the Canucks. And Rich in Cloverdale had this one. Forbort being missing all year so far is very similar to Susie being missing for much of last year, especially at the beginning. Underrated but very important players on our left side of the defense. Should really help steady things out, especially on the PK. And look, Susie was a bigger free agent acquisition, so there are obviously higher expectations for him. But I that parallel had occurred to me as well, right? Where because it was a new player who was missing time early in their tenure, I don't know if fans and us in the media even really knew how to kind of like factor in the absence from the lineup. And look, Forbort, you know, you're not expecting him to come in and completely change how your team looks, but he's also a key veteran defender that this team signed. As Rich says, especially on the penalty kill, which we've seen struggle, he should help. So it's not as if it's going to transform what the team is doing, but I do think it's fair to point to it as a key piece being out of the lineup right now for the Canucks.
I struggle with this one. Carson Soucy was always a better bet to be able to scale up from a third pair role than Derek Forbort. You know, I think where my mileage is limited here is that while I quite like Derek Forbort, I mean, you know, I've been banging the table year after year saying this guy can do the job. I'm not necessarily sure that on his return, he should supplant even Eric Brandstrom's minutes. So this is not about Forbort. It's that the Canucks have found a guy on the third pair who I think is cooking.
Mm-hmm.
And like is cooking at a level that's probably a little bit higher than I sort of rate Forbort at.
Yeah.
And I'm, again, very high on the player. I think he's exceedingly useful and a penalty-killing ace. I think that's really the area where he'll help the most. But, you know, even when he comes back, if the team was to try, say, Forbort Myers as a second pair, well, I'd still want Susi Branson.
I agree.
Right? Like,
it's not, even though he's left-handed, it's not there's no question that he doesn't take Branstrom out of the lineup right now. Well, it's you're going with four lefties, to me.
And so even if you were trying that just to give yourself a shot at something different on the second pair, my first response would be, why not try it now with Branstrom? And either on the right side with Soucy or on the left side with Myers, right? Like, to me, that's a better bet. So this is why I struggle with this one. I think right now, just given how Brandstrom has performed and generally what I think of his game, I would rate Forbort as more like LD4, given just how his season is shaken out. And I never would have said that about Ian Cole. I never would have
Carson
said that
Susie.
About Soucy last year. You know, I see what they're saying, and I think they're definitely right about the penalty kill, but I can't fully get there.
He's not going to have the same impact as Soucy. It's just, I think it's just, there's an interesting parallel to just almost forgetting about the player, right? Which I remember happening with Soucy around this time last year as well. And as his absence stretched on, it was just like, we have no idea what it's going to look like because they haven't been available. And you're right. Forbort was not brought in to have the same role that Soucy was brought in to have. So it's different in that way, but I still think it's a useful player. And as they are like, man, we just don't have very many options on the blue line, that would be give them at least an option to do something with potentially. Although I agree, you got to keep Eric Brandstrom in the lineup. Now, we touched on it in the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard, right? And just some of your reporting and what you're hearing about what they might be targeting on the blue line. And an interesting part of that, right, is, as you said, the sense from the team that, okay, maybe not right now. Right now, they don't necessarily have options. They're really excited to call up from Abbotsford and insert into the NHL lineup. But that could look a lot different a year from now, maybe even slightly sooner than that in the case of some players. But that could look a lot different. And they have a group of defensive prospects, both in Abbotsford, but also Sawyer Mineo in the WHL, Tom Volander in the NCAA, that this team is pretty excited about what they could do in the future.
Yes. Yeah. So this is the caught in between thing. right? Where you've got Kudryavtsev, you've got Elias Pettersson, you've got Cole McWard, who the club is really interested in down in Abbotsford. We'll ask Ryan Johnson a question about that trio, or you know, multiple questions about each guy on that trio. And then you've got Tom Volander killing it this season in his sophomore year at the NCAA level. Looks like he's beginning to be a more assertive, dynamic attacking piece, which was something the club really challenged him to do this season. Will definitely be at the World Juniors.
Yep.
Competing for Team Sweden and probably in a more premium role than he logged last year on that loaded Team Sweden defense. I wouldn't expect PP1 because Axel Sandin Palicka is for sure going to hold down that role, but you'd still expect to see him play major minutes, take on a leadership role there. And I'm going to be fascinated to see if that, you know, more dynamic attacking presence that he's displayed at BU can sort of continue at that higher level of competition at the World Juniors. And then, you know, you've got Sawyer Mineo, who also might be there for Team Canada. Like, he increasingly is making a strong case for inclusion on Canada's U20 roster, which would be a pretty tremendous accomplishment for a recent third-round pick, whose offensive game has kind of gone nuke a little bit ever since the Canucks drafted him as, like, a third-pair guy, PK specialist on that loaded Seattle Thunderbirds team, right? The all of Seattle's star-level players, including Dylan Gunther and Tiege Ginla and on, moved on either to the NHL or to other WHL teams. Mineo got this promotion, and he's been killing it for a year and a half since. So, you know, there's options coming.
Yeah.
And I think the club feels that way. I think the club's really hopeful about sort of this pipeline that they've begun to construct here. But it's not ready yet. It's not ready yet. And so you look at Volander, and, you know, I'd expect him to turn pro after this year. I think he wanted to turn pro after last year, and I think the club felt that the NCAA was the best place for him. I would expect him, however, to turn pro after the season, and then you get to a really interesting question, which is, do you choose the NHL route, start his ELC right away, give him a cup of coffee toward the end of the season, see if he's an option for the Stanley Cup playoffs? That's the Cale Makar route. I mean, I don't know if Canucks fans were paying that much attention to it, but, like, Cale Makar basically played like two NHL games and then started stomping a heavily favored Calgary Flames team in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And that was his NHL debut. There's also the, you know, Max Sassenway, where you sign the AHL deal and you can play in the Calder Cup playoffs. And honestly, I mean, that might be the better route, but there's all sorts of leverage points.
Well, the player has a say in that too.
Oh, right? Yeah. especially when look, it's pretty good life to play Div 1 hockey in that Massachusetts area.
Like, yeah.
Live in Boston, college life, world-class facilities, play on the weekends. Like, pretty sick. So, yeah, that'll be a fascinating dynamic to track in terms of exactly how that works out. Yeah, I think the club has a sense that they have real defensive options or real prospects coming in the pipeline, players with upside to help fill in the gaps over sort of the long haul. It's just about building that bridge.
And it's really, I find it a fascinating conversation and a debate, and I'm sure it's a dilemma in the Canucks front office as well, or at least something that they're thinking a lot about, which is, how much do you value this year versus next, versus 2 years from now, versus 3 years from now, et cetera, right? And I think this is something you and I have talked about, not recently, but a fair bit on this show, just the idea of, like, when are the prime years? Have they opened a window here, and how long is that window? And one of the things that's always been a significant factor in that conversation is JT Miller's age, right? And how much longer are you going to be able to count on him as an elite top end of your lineup player and point producer? And I think this is kind of where the rubber meets the road, and you have to start making some tough decisions, right? Because you're excited about the options you have coming on the blue line, but okay, if Tom Volander is a, you know, top four caliber player for you 2 years from now, that's great. That's awesome. Is your window still going to be open at that point, right? When he's really ready to help you win games in the Stanley Cup playoffs. And I'm not saying it definitely won't be. We have no way of knowing that for sure. But there's at least a little bit of risk there, right? Like, there's risk attached to looking at your defensive prospect pool and saying, okay, hey, we just got to wait for a couple of years until those guys are ready to really help us win, because you don't know what the rest of your roster is going to look like. And specifically, the JT Miller age factor starts to really loom large in that scenario for me. So I don't know what the correct answer is, right? I'm not saying, oh, forget about those guys coming. You just got to go all in and find the best rental you can for this year. But it's something you have to weigh. Like, oh, yeah. There has to be a certain priority put on this season beyond future years.
For sure. But I think for that priority to apply, Jamie, this team needs to look like a contender.
Yep. That's true.
Right. And this is partly what I'm saying. Like, this team hasn't consistently played the right way. And that's crucial, right? Like, one of the reasons that this management group was so aggressive last season was to reward, and they explicitly said this, reward the players for how they bought in, for the discipline with which they bought in, for the work ethic they bought into, for the way that they, you know, pulled up their socks and turned this team around. Well, not that this management group's wavering on this core group that they, you know, have long since believed in. I mean, that was probably their main take when they took over, was like, we think we have this group of players, and we think the Jim Rutherford quote from the opening, we think some of these guys are better than anyone even thinks they are, right? Like, this is, they have been all in on this core. I'm not saying that's wavering by any means, but I do think this team needs to look like a contender or play like a contender, or at least maintain the work ethic to play the right way according to the organization's internal standard before you're getting to a point of saying you need to prioritize this season. They haven't done it consistently enough, I think, for that to be, you know, something that you should weigh really heavily at this point, in my view.
And I wonder how much of that, obviously, some of that is the team game, right? And as you were saying earlier, there's been concern about them getting away from their identity, not playing the right way. But a lot of that's also got to come down to, does Elias Pettersson, like we talked about him yesterday,
100%.
Does he step up and carry you here, right? Does he start to look like the guy you're paying, wanted to pay $11.6 million? Right. How does JT Miller look when he comes back?
Thatcher Demko.
What does Thatcher Demko look like, right? Because
no kidding.
Even if the team gets back to the Rick Tocchet identity and is doing things the right way, if, you know, Elias Pettersson's scoring at a 65-point pace and Thatcher Demko is like kind of league average, that's going to be really hard to invest in this team in a meaningful way at the trade deadline then.
Brock Besser, too, by the way. Like, how many times have we seen, I mean, Daniel Sedin's a perfect example. How many times have we seen guys sustain head injuries, and really their brain injuries? I actually think we should be disciplined about calling them brain injuries, although in this case we have never had it confirmed. How many times have we seen, you know, goal scorers, and it takes a bit? You know, if you're paying attention to the NFL, like Malik Nabers, the Giants wide receiver, was on pace for a historic rookie season, hasn't looked the same since he sustained a concussion in week 4. This happens. So there's a lot of uncertainty, and that cuts both ways, right? Right now, I think the idea that this team should be mortgaging their future or win now with any level of recklessness doesn't really pass muster, in part because, I don't know, are you seeing a team that you think has a credible shot at winning the Stanley Cup?
No, not right now.
Not right now.
No.
But are you open to the possibility that you might be in 12 to 24 games?
Yes,
I am.
100%.
I think this team's shown us a high floor, right? What we haven't seen
is the ceiling.
We haven't seen anything approximating the ceiling.
No.
We haven't seen more than like 5.5 feet up. You know, the ceiling that we're seeing from this team is one we have to bend down so we don't hit our head on.
We have the Roomba view of the team.
Right.
Right along the ground.
Yeah, it's like lovely floor. Lovely floor.
Beautiful, clean floor.
I'm going to navigate my way around this floor like a Roomba. And so we haven't seen the ceiling on this team at all. And so, you know, until someone turns off the fog machine and gives us a view, we won't exactly know if it's just like stucco or the Sistine Chapel.
Yeah, it is interesting, though, because people are texting in, oh, this team hasn't proven enough to go all in on it. And I get that.
Not yet. Not yet.
I think it's absolutely true. It's also like, okay, it is risky. It would be risky to go all in on this team, but it's risky to punt it to the future too. You know what I mean? And I think we always consistently downplay the risk of that when we're talking not just about the Canucks, but about any teams, right? It's always seen as the safe option. Keep your powder dry, hold on. And sometimes that's absolutely true, but there's risks that come with that as well, right? As Brock Besser's a UFA, Thatcher Demko, who knows what his status is.
For sure.
You don't need me to go down the list. JT Miller's age, right? So I don't think it's as simple as, well, this team hasn't played their best yet, so we can't make a trade to help the team. Yes, you got to see more at some point. but you might have to make a little bit of a bet, right? Like, you might have to get ahead of yourself and say, okay, we're seeing progress, and that's enough for us to do a significant move to add to the team.
Hey, you know me. You know how much I think certainty is a trap, right? I firmly believe that being comfortable with uncertainty is essential, and I think there is enough here to bet on. But would it not be reckless at this point with what this team has shown us and with sort of how this group has performed? And I'm not talking about wins and losses. Truly talking about the consistency of focus and work ethic that we've seen from this group, which has flagged regularly over the course of the season. It hasn't been, they haven't been dialed as a group. I think they'd admit that in an honest moment, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, given that, I think if you're trading like a significant future for a 27-year-old pending UFA defenseman, that to me should exceed this club's risk tolerance.
Mm-hmm.
If you're finding an Ethan Bear style deal, if you're finding if you're trading a mid-round pick for a guy who, you know, is like almost like another Brännström type lotto ticket, who either a bottom six centerman or a right-handed shooting winger, like another Sprong, another Brännström quality guy that you acquire for a modest cost, no problem. That makes sense, for sure. But I think going beyond that requires more intel, at least if you're going to go beyond that responsibly. I think we'll know a lot more in 2-3 weeks.
Well, I also say the other, like, to get back to some of your reporting, the thing that kind of bridges both points of view is the player of team control. That can help you now, but also help you down the road, right? And I think that's part of why they're probably interested in that, is because, okay, get somebody that can help us now, because we don't want to write this season off, right? Nobody's sitting here saying, oh, this team can't get to that contender level. That's absolutely possible that they could. So be open to somebody that can help you in the here and now, but you want to make sure you're not only getting I agree that a pending UFA doesn't make a lot of sense right now. And there's not even that many interesting ones on the market. Like Marcus Pettersson was a stud, it'd be a different conversation, but like whatever.
So let's frame this way, okay? Because you're talking about the uncertainty on Besser, for example, and the uncertainty, who was the other guy you brought
Demko
up?
Demko Miller.
Demko, okay. So the Miller age thing, the Demko injury thing, the Besser expiring UFA thing. Right? So say you're talking about adding the big swing on defense, and you're talking about an acquisition cost that's like a 2025 second round pick, right? And
not a first.
Well, and Nils Höglander.
Okay.
Okay. Now you've enhanced your risk on the Besser file, because you don't have a guy who you can credibly look at and say he'll help us replace him. Not that he can replace him. He'll help us replace that player, right? That's the sort of thing we're talking about, where it's a delicate balance. You don't want to just make a move. Like, if you're making a move just to shake things up, I think that's perfectly acceptable. I wouldn't put that past Rutherford and Alvin. I never do. But that to me is, Brännström, Sprong, mid-round pick tier move.
If you're making a move just to shake things up, you're talking like a third or at most, right? Where you're just like, okay, we're going to throw something at the wall and see if it sticks here.
But like Höglander and the first round pick, those are the if you're talking about a defenseman, if you're talking about landing a Matheson, if you're talking about landing a Marcus Pettersson, if you're talking about trying to tempt Nashville into parting with Alexandre Carrier or whomever, start at Höglander or a first round pick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, flat out, that's what the market is looking like right now. Like, this is an insane market for defensemen. A truly incredible spot that we've entered. And, you know, I think that's where this team is weighing these sort of decisions with an uncharacteristic level of an uncharacteristic level of sort of resistance
to making a move,
because they're aggressive. Like, this is an aggressive front office. This is a team that, again, they believe in overpaying for the right fit, that they believe that being active on the trade market is a competitive edge, right? They believe this stuff, right? They believe that no one wins, right? That there is no point in sitting at home in February and watching a player struggle on a different team and saying, man, I'm glad we didn't pay for that guy in November. You know, that's purely hypothetical. Who cares? The question is, does he help you win?
Yeah.
Like, that's what they believe. That's how they are wired. And yet, I think it's telling, right, that at this point in the season, anyway, it does feel like the long-term consideration still matters. That tells me they need to see more from this group.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that. That's me reading between the lines of some of the things that I do know about how they're thinking about this. I think they need to see more from this group.
Just before we go to break, a bunch of people texting in, and as we talk about, you know, defensemen with team control, people texting in about David Jurecek from Columbus. So
let's go.
I agree, but does he pass the he's going to play more than Susie and Myers in the playoffs bar?
No, but he passes the that's a sick fit for a long time bar.
It does, but it's just
do you want
it's, it just seems like
do you want a 6 foot four defenseman?
I do. Trust me.
200 pounds right handed.
Absolutely.
Do you like if he's a historic scorer at both the World Juniors and the American League
and the
level?
AHL?
Do you want to bet against Columbus Blue Jackets coaching and sort of day-to-day management the last 2 years? Yes. Check.
All I'm saying is that move would imply a very different window for contention than I thought we were dealing with. And maybe that's the right move. And maybe there's a pivot, and maybe that's the right move. But I don't think you're plugging him into your top four if you think you're chasing the Stanley Cup this year. He's a 20-year-old player with 53 NHL games. You know what I mean? So
yeah, but
I'm interested in it.
No, but teams win the cup with young players.
Man, you got to really believe. The top four on a Stanley Cup contending team is a huge bar for a young player to cross.
Yeah, but this is the sort of guy you'd make that swing on. And look, at the end of the day, even if he ends up third pair for you in year one, I mean, that's okay. Like, as much as there are risks inherent with going beyond this season or looking beyond this season, there's also upside that's unapparent, right? Like, you get another year out of Lekkerimäki. Pettersson is still prime-aged. Hughes is still prime-aged. Demko, yeah, sure, he'll be expiring in a year, but he'll also have an additional year of recovery from this injury. You know, JT Miller will be 31. Well, that's not 38. It's 31.
How dare you, as a 38-year-old.
I'm just saying, it's different.
Oh, babe, it is. I can attest to that.
Yeah,
it is very
me
different.
Too. Yeah. I'm 37, man. I'm not calling you old.
Yeah. Look, I will say with Jurecek, he is the type of player that if you might be thinking, "Oh, our window of contention is this," but you have to be willing to think a little bit outside the box.
If you're not hammering the table and saying, "Yes, what do we need to do?" I think you're thinking about it the wrong way. That's exactly the sort of game-changing piece that this team should be going after, in my view. But, you know, that's without seeing the price.
Yeah, exactly. That's the caveat there.
And these guys always go, I mean, look at the Braden Jaeger, Rutger McGrody deal as instructive. These guys always go for a like prospect, right? Like a recent first round high pedigree pick. So the answer to David Jurecek is a stone cold yes. But is the answer to David Jurecek a stone cold yes if the price is Lekkerimäki?
No.
Is it if it's Tom Volander? Right? Yeah. So that's the question you really have to ask yourself.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a break. Ryan Johnson, he is the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks. He joins us next here on the Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd. It's Thomas Drance. We are coming to you live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we're now very pleased to be joined by our next guest. He is the general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks, Ryan Johnson. Ryan, thank you very much for making some time for us today. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. And I mean, there's no shortage of interesting things to talk to you about involving the Abbotsford Canucks and, you know, players who are coming up to play for the Vancouver Canucks as well. And most recently, Max Sasson recalled by the Vancouver Canucks on this road trip with them right now. What can you tell us about Max as a player and what he did to earn this opportunity?
Well, he's a very good two-way player, responsible. Has had a great, you know, journey with us since coming right out of college and jumped in as into the American League and had a real impact on our group, which is you know, is extremely hard to do. He's a mature player, has had a, you know, you, I don't think statistically isn't where you put value on him as a player. He's an extremely smart player. He transports the puck from the D zone to the offensive zone very well. He attacks, and he's smart, plays well with skilled players, but he also has some compete and some feistiness in his game. And he's just come along and developed with us as a group very well. And we felt that where he was at, he was a guy that had earned this opportunity based on, you know, his professionalism, what he puts into the game, how he's played, how he treats his teammates. And we have all the confidence in him in the world to come in and play a game or multiple for us.
RJ, it seems like the level of integration between your club down in Abbotsford and obviously the big club up in Vancouver is sort of working at a level that maybe the club's been working toward for a couple of years. How has that changed sort of your job and your club's sort of evaluation of players and the interaction between what a player can learn in the NHL and then how they apply it in the American League?
Well, I think very much about the language and the communication and from our both coaching staffs, right from day one, talking about the same foundational pieces. Even in discussion with now, once teams have been established as far as guys making our NHL team and guys that we're going to start in the American League and work towards being an NHL player, even in the summer, the discussion between Tock and Manny, the coaching staffs, the language, the expectation, everything organizationally that we're talking about, it's very easy for me to deliver to a group of players starting in the American Hockey League to say, you know, it's not the 5-point weekend in the American Hockey League that is going to get you your opportunity. It's your compete, your wall play, your management of the game. Like, we don't look at stat sheets. We don't, you know, do a lot about who scored or how did they score. It's who is playing the right way, who are doing the things that the big word for me with the American is what translates to you being an actual NHL player and not an American Hockey League player that can produce offensively, but we can't really depend on to win games at the National Hockey League level. And I think that's created a language and a foundation of what the organization expectation is for each and every player. And that's across the board. And those are questions that Tock asks, that who is the next guy up, that Patrick and Jim and in our group were discussing these types of foundational pieces that I think is very good communication for our young guys of what they really need to dial in on, as opposed to just, hey, I hope I can get a couple points here on the power play and that'll get me my opportunity.
Ryan, you mentioned Manny Malhotra, who, of course, took over behind the bench for Abbotsford this season, his first year as an AHL head coach. How would you assess the job that Manny Malhotra has done in that role so far?
Well, he's done a fantastic job. And anybody that can look at our roster, look at the amount of injuries we've had, the amount of young players that we are relying on, first-year players, guys that I don't think people expected to have the impact or even the opportunity right out of the gate. So I think a real positive was I've had to revamp that entire staff intentionally. I didn't want to give them too much information on players. I wanted them to have their ability to make up their own opinions, form their own evaluations of where guys were at, where they wanted to go. And I think that's been really good for our players coming back, new set of eyes, and it's when you get that many new bodies and staff from not just a head coach and two assistant coaches, from a goalie coach to a video coach to a new head trainer, and I was excited about the overall energy that Manny was going to bring and guidance, and I think that is our players can feel that, and it's been, although we're very early, I've been extremely happy with the staff and the job that they've done with a very young group of players that are going to be a big part of our future.
So, Ryan, Sasson comes up, Lekaramäki goes back down. We've seen throughout this season with Aturatu, with Arshdeep Baines, this sort of approach where a player gets a cup of coffee at the NHL level, goes back down to Abbotsford to sort of apply some of what they learned. We've talked about before on this program the idea of, you know, wrapping your head around going back to the American League and sort of the emotional aspect of that for players. But has this sort of approach or this kind of pipeline, this interchangeability between opportunities in the show and at the American League level, has that sort of changed or modified the way that you're approaching it with these players?
Well, I think one thing we've wanted to give guys an opportunity, and again, sometimes you get the opportunity, you get a taste of what the National Hockey League is about, you feel it, and then coming back to the American League of, okay, I learned a lot, and whether it's a 2 or 5 game block, and now I think all of our players have come back from that experience not with a, well, what happened? I thought I was ready made. They come back going, I learned a ton, and a lot of the language or the things that have been talked about. Sometimes you just have to feel it, taste it. And I think a lot of them come back and go, oh, that's what you guys were talking about. The importance of the defense of an offensive blue line, management of a game. Sometimes you have to make the play to give yourself a chance to get on a forecheck. All these things, they come back going, now I really understand, and I want to get to work to do it. And so I think having all these different guys, and I think we've got other guys have yet to play that we're very confident that can play or that are growing to get to that point. And I think to allow them to feel that and come back and not feel, wow, you know, I'm ready to do it. When you learn a lesson, you have success. You look at Lecky, we thought he did a lot of good things, but Lecky is now coming back with a knowledge and an experience that is going to allow him to take another step forward here in the American Hockey League. But we think, again, will his next time and his next opportunity, he'll be able to take another step at that level.
We've mostly seen some of the organizations promising forwards come up to play in the NHL, Sasson obviously being the latest, but we've already mentioned Baines and Ratu and Lekkerimäki too. Now, on defense at the moment, in your club's recent win over Bakersfield, for example, Manny ran out a pairing that featured both McWard and Kirill Kudryavtsev. What are you seeing from some of the young defenders? We saw Elias Pettersson get a call-up, even if he didn't get into a game recently. How are some of those young defenders, that trio in particular, tracking in the early going this year?
Well, again, for Kirill, Petey, even McWard is still young. Jetwoo and this group of young organizational pieces that we've been growing with, and there's guys that we've got bodies, there's guys out of the lineup that have mm-hmm. played well for us. But I think and you guys would know this, at any position, I think the hardest position to adapt to and in the American Hockey League, sometimes for defensemen, it's a bit of a slow growth. It can be a couple of years before the size, the strength, the pace, time and space, all those things. So for Kirill and Wardle and Pete, these guys that you expected, and they're having their moments, but they're learning at such a fast rate is a real compliment to their professionalism, how they're approaching it, the instruction and the coaching they're getting from Manny and his staff, and I think a little bit of their hockey sense and their ability to adapt and pick up these things very quickly. We're asking a lot of a very young D-Corps that, if you go around the American Hockey League, not a lot of teams would be that young on their back end. But these guys are earning their opportunity. They're not being given anything. They have their ups and downs. And like I said, again, for Manny and staff, they are coaching the you-know-what out of these kids. And it's every day, and it's hard days, and it's not easy. But there's a ton of communication, coaching, guidance, and encouragement that I think is really helping this young group.
From that young group of defensemen that you mentioned there, RJ, do you see players that could potentially be NHL options, you know, as soon as later this season, should the need arise for the big club?
Well, yeah, and I'm not a big timeline guy as far as in the sense, but we allow these players to, their play kind of does does the talking. If Petey was not recalled for any other reason than he had played that well, that had we needed him to go on and play, we were extremely comfortable with. So the competition, you know, we've got some older guys that are banged up. We're missing a ton of guys out of our lineup, but it's created a youthful competition, which is healthy. So I call the American Hockey League a Christmas league, based off of, I find these guys get to Christmas and they come back and everybody takes a big step forward. The young players just seems to click something. All of a sudden, it's a little more order for them and their brains on the ice, and they tend to take a big step. And so to see where some of these guys are going to be come January, we're really excited. And we're sitting here at the end of November, and they've showed their ability to take on the responsibility at this level so quickly that I'm excited to see where they are the second half of the year.
Ryan, you know, we've done a fair number of these interviews with you over the last few years, and one player we tend to ask about is Danila Klimovic. And, you know, it's kind of remarkable. This is his fourth full season in the AHL. He doesn't turn 22 until January, so still very young for the AHL, despite all that experience. And, you know, I know you said you don't look at stats, right? You're not counting their production, but just from my view, his production is up this year. What are you seeing from Danila Klimovic? Again, still only 21, but he's played a lot of AHL games. How's his game trending right now?
Well, yeah, and to your point, if we look statistically, there's growth. When I look at him as a player and a person, I see 20 goals on the stat sheet, to be honest, based off of, and I think, again, the coaching staff has done a very good job of, I think the game has become a lot of fun for Klimo. He's learning how to make mistakes and accept them and learn by them. Just little details of his game, D-zone awareness, using his teammates, trusting that, you know, the way this kid shoots the puck, the skill level that he has, the ability to change an angle and get a shot off is as good as there. But sometimes when you can trust your teammates to give it and find those little pockets and get it back, I think he's doing that extremely well, his compete. But I see a lot of just fun in his eyes of playing the game, and it's showing with his passion. And Klimo's his biggest own critic at times, and it's you know, I think he's taken, and again, to your point, how young this kid is, I think he's learning to deal with mistakes that are going to happen throughout a game and turn them into positives, and it's showing. And the responsibility, if you look at his ice time, you look at situationally, he's out there in empty nets at time, and he's taking on this responsibility and really thriving with it. So again, here's another kid, a fourth year pro, that I can't wait to see where he's at in January or February, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but he is a young man that is growing on the ice and off the ice.
Ryan, just one more for you. You know, I think our listeners would understand this, but not quite have a sense of just how much you invest, both in terms of time, but also in terms of, you know, how much you genuinely want the guys you work with to succeed. So Max Sasson out in Ottawa was talking to the media after practice today and noted that after his call-up, he called his dad, who is probably his biggest fan. He said he started screaming, started crying. Pretty special phone call. It's his first game, too, it feels like, said Sasson. What's your reaction to a comment like that from a guy you've worked closely with?
Well, what's funny is that when some of the conversations we've had since he got on board and started training camp, we had a very good conversation of just of his game and where I felt it could really go to give him an opportunity. And calling him for the Max is, you always know where he is because he's energetic. He's always talking. He almost gives, he's almost a play by play of his life as he lives it. So you love that energy. His teammates love his energy, his coaches. And when I called him to let him know, I think we talked for about 7 minutes before I actually had to ask him, like, Sass, do you know why I'm calling? So to be able to then say, well, okay, Sass, this is why I'm actually calling, and these are, you know, this is why I do, this is why I do what I do. He was, you know, very caught off guard and speechless, but you could tell the excitement, his desire to call his parents immediately and let them know. And yeah, I mean, credit to the coaches, to Max, and like I said, the professionals and what he puts into it. We were excited to give him this opportunity, that's for sure.
Well, that's a good tip. A new go-to quote for Vancouver media, Max Sisson.
There you go.
Brian, that's fantastic stuff. Thank you for your insight. Thank you for your time. Hopefully we can chat again soon.
Okay, thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. That is Ryan Johnson, general manager of the Abbotsford Canucks. And as we said off the top of that interview, I mean, obviously most recently with the Max Sisson call-up, and yeah, I saw that clip come along my timeline as well, and great stuff from Max Sisson talking about calling his dad and telling him the news. But from the Max Sisson call-up to Lekkomäki, I mean, Ratu making the team at a training camp, then going back down, then coming back up, Baines getting stints, right? Like, this has been a very Abbotsford-centric first stretch of games here for the Vancouver Canucks. Even Artur Shelobs went down and played for Abbotsford already this year.
Well, and that's, you know, partly what it's designed to do. And now that the club's out of LTI, they're able to fully utilize the advantage of having a local American League affiliate. Mm-hmm. It's been a really nice fit. Abbotsford Canucks, by the way, on the road through the rest of December, but a lengthy homestand for the rest of November, but a lengthy homestand in December sees them play a bunch of games between December 7th and December 21st for all your holiday American League viewing pleasure.
Yeah. And it's been, you know, an up and down season, I think it's fair to say, for the Abbotsford Canucks. They're a hair under 500 points percentage there. So
not a lot of saves.
No, not a lot of saves.
Kind of hard to evaluate. You know, the
especially like the young defenseman, right? I mean, we're seeing that with, well, especially with Carson Soucy, where everything is ending up in the back of your net. It colors it so dramatically.
Well, and especially Malhotra. I mean, it's easy to point to the record and say, oh, you know, first year head coach or what have you. But the goaltending has been, you know, a major storyline. And it'll be fascinating to see when Demko gets back how the club exactly decides to manage their goalie platoon. You know, I don't think they're married to the three goalies in the NHL approach that they'd sort of entered the season intending on running. You know, Shelobs at this point would be a massive addition to Abbotsford if he went down. So we'll be very interesting to watch exactly how that all plays out.
Yeah, that could really, really help the Abbotsford Canucks at this point, and probably help Shelobs as well. I mean, he's had a couple of better starts at the NHL level, but still, just a chance to play some regular games and rebuild that confidence, make some saves, would probably be big for Shelobs. You touched on it with Ryan Johnson. I know you wrote about it at The Athletic as well, but Lekkomäki, 5 games in the NHL, scores a goal, goes back down to Abbotsford, and, you know, I can understand from fans some temptation maybe to be disappointed in that, but internally, that's exactly what they were kind of expecting, right? Like, that's very much the plan here, is get these guys some experience, and then, as you said to Ryan Johnson, okay, now you know what it's actually like. We can tell you all we want that, oh, it's the pace quickens a lot, it's really fast, you got to be ready for that. It's one thing to hear it. It's one thing to actually experience it. Now you can actually apply that. And so I think you use the words unqualified success to describe how the club looks at the Lekkomäki and the NHL experience right now.
Yeah. No, that they were really happy. And, you know, I come back to he was up there and he looked like a player. If this was a team,
he didn't look wildly out of place.
If this was a team cruising to a 75 to 85 point finish this year, he would be on your third line, and you'd be like, he's having a good, we're confident that he's going to have a successful season and be a big part. You know, this club's trying to do something a little different than that in terms of sort of what they need from those spots, right? That the line that he has to get to, he's at a level where you could give this guy a job in the NHL as a third line winger and power play specialist, and he could handle that at an average clip. This club wants him to come up when he's ready to help them win games in a role like that. And I do think there's still some space to travel, but he's at that level. where he could hold down an NHL job effectively. Rick Tocchet told media after practice today in Ottawa that Besser will not play tomorrow, which matches what we'd expect of his escalation through a typical five-step concussion protocol. And Demko had another good day on ice, Tocchet noted, but says he still needs more practice time. So
I'm starting to think more and more it's going to be it when they get home.
Well, that's what Rick Dhaliwal sort of intimated over the course of his hit on Halford and Bruff. And, you know, I'm very curious to know how much the impact of road recovery versus home recovery and just the way that the schedule breaks down might impact the ultimate decision making on when exactly Demko returns. Makes so much sense to me that if you could, you would
like
bring him back
at home. Yeah. And I just think reading the tea leaves here and Tocchet stressing he needs practice time, and Demko, well, we really got to kind of stress test it and put it through hell. Like, it doesn't seem like a 3-day thing. It seems like a little longer.
And people think like, well, it'd be better even if you could just make the debut on the road where there's no media. No, it's like, that doesn't matter, man. You've heard Demko.
It's physical.
You've heard Demko give these soliloquies to the media. Like, this guy's, that's not a, does he love doing it? No. Is he very, very good at it? Yes. Like, I'm guaranteeing you, a person wired like Demko, as thoughtful as he is about every aspect of his game and readiness and body and recovery and rehab, I guarantee you it's ultimately his return is going to be dictated by what's best for him.
Big thank you to Ryan Johnson. That was great to have him on the show. So much to get into with the Abbotsford Canucks.
Next time we have him on, we'll talk for 7 minutes before asking him a question, just to do the Maxis on. I love that.
You would love that.
I would.
That's right up your alley.
That is how life should be, man. Quick business call. 7 minutes.
Minutes of chat. Not just a quick business call, but like a momentous call. Like a huge call for Max Sassen in his life.
And your GM can't even get the words in because you're talking about like the color changing spoon you found in your cereal box or whatever.
That would be pretty exciting,
right? That's a good day. That's a 7-minute. That's 7 minutes.
All right. Final segment of the week coming up. Our guy, Dmitry Filipovich, in studio here next on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance, live from the Kintec studio here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Metro Vancouver's trusted choice for contractors and reno warriors for over 50 years. Visit them at one of their three locations to serve you or online at DunbarLumber.com. We are now very pleased to be joined in studio, as we usually are here on a Friday afternoon, by our pal. He's the host of the Hockey PDOcast here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. He is Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, Dmitry?
Fellas, what's going on?
Are you looking at my interview prep?
I am. Just senators
with an exclamation point.
And then a second point that has yet to be filled.
That is yet to be filled.
Hopefully
in.
Hopefully we'll find that second point along the way.
We'll see. We'll see what happens.
So let's start this interview off by asking the question that's on everyone's mind. Senators?
Senators?
Senators!
It's not even a question. It's a statement. It's exclamation mark.
Okay, sorry. Let me try again then.
Senators.
Senators!
Yes. Yes.
There you go. Take it. Take the ball and run with it.
I agree. Although, you know what? I agree. But I was more excited before this stretch they've recently been on, which we highlighted as a real sort of litmus test for them. I believe it was Carolina, Edmonton, Vegas. Consecutively, they lost all three. The most recent one against Vegas was the most competitive of the bunch. I believe they got into the 40s in shots on goal, and so at least you like to see that from them. The previous two were left a bit more to be desired. But listen, I mean, we knew that was going to be a really difficult stretch for them. I still like them, at least in theory, more than a lot of the other teams they're competing with for one of those final spots in the Atlantic Division. So I agree. Senators, exclamation mark.
What differentiates this year's Senators the most from past editions of the team?
Honestly, the coaching.
Yeah.
And I know our audience is going to love to hear that, Travis Green. They just seem, in the past, they were so deeply unserious. Like every time you'd, you'd buy some stock and you'd be like, all right, well, they just had a couple games where they scored a bunch of goals. They would follow it up with just complete defensive lapses and meltdowns.
I want to be so clear. I never bought any Senators stock.
Most people.
Most people.
Are you now?
I have. I'm holding some Senators stock.
All right.
Their underlying profile is excellent.
Yeah. But you also love to zag when people zag.
No. I knew that Hot Pierre Summer was a massive load. Like, I just knew that that was a massive load that shouldn't be taken seriously.
Yes. It was really funny at the time. It's even funnier in hindsight. I think this team is certainly much more competitive. Their 5-on-5 metrics, as Tom said, are significantly different than they've been in the past. Defensively, in particular, they seem like they're at least an average, if not above average, team. They need to get a bit better offensively at 5-on-5. They haven't been generating nearly enough chances. But you look at the personnel, and it's like, especially while they're healthy now with Josh Norris playing every game, they should be able to create more. And so I do expect that to come along. If it does without the defensive environment declining, then all of a sudden I think they are cooking with something.
This road trip is a who's who of non-playoff teams in the Eastern Conference for the Canucks. And yet, Senators, new coach Bump Bruins, and Buffalo Sabres all strike me as dangerous. Are you full?
And the Penguins are a second of a back-to-back.
That's
for the
true.
Canucks, that's yes. true. Yeah.
So maybe the Canucks don't have their usual speed edge.
They'll only get
the Penguins.
They'll only get 27 odd managers
instead of 58.
Yeah.
I want to talk Bruins though. Obviously fired Jim Montgomery. I don't know, man. The reaction to the Jim Montgomery firing reminded me a little bit of the reaction to the Andrew Brunette firing, where I just don't think the Bruins were winning games the last 2 years because of coaching, frankly. I thought a lot of it was goaltending that was propping up some serious flaws within the team. I thought there was a lot of details being missed even by their best players just from a baseline accountability perspective. So I sort of understood it. What was your take on the firing, and are you ready to throw some dirt on the Bruins casket yet from a Black Magic standpoint?
Well, I think that's a fair point you raise. I'll counter it, though, with I don't think they were losing games this year because of coaching.
No, I agree with that.
Right? So, like, if maybe Jim Montgomery got too much credit, especially during that Jack Adams year where everything went right for them. They set the record, regular season wins, of course. I don't think – you look at the personnel this year, and you say what you will about that Black Magic, but the fourth line, first couple weeks of the season, it was, like, a cute story. Like, oh, look at Mark Kastelic John Beecher. They're carrying them offensively. This is funny. And then it just continued, and the other top guys just never started producing. Now, I would expect David Pastrnak and Charlie McAvoy to play much better than they have. I do think Brad Marchand at this point just does not move the same way he used to, which makes sense considering the serious hip injury he had in the past and his age. And so if he's not going to come around, so much of the responsibility is on Pastrnak here, and he's playing with Pavel Zacha and Morgan Geeky. Like, I think it's one of the least desirable environments for any star player in the league right now. So much is on his shoulders. They have a last ranked power play in the league. So I just don't know where the offensive manufacturing is going to come from here, unless it's just Pastrnak one timing everything into the net.
Well, and
which you might be able to do.
Which you might be able to do, but there's just not enough around him, right? And even now, the power play has been so predictable and so inefficient that even that hasn't been working.
And, they go out and sign Elias Lindholm, obviously, in the summer. And someone I follow on Twitter made the point, now that Montgomery's out and Joe Sacco takes over, I think this is Lindholm's fifth coach in the last 3 years. Three of them are Jack Adams winners. And the only time he's looked like a top of the lineup center is when he was playing with Matthew Tkachuk and Johnny Gaudreau. And since then, he has not looked close to that. And at a certain point, again, to your point, I don't think it was Jim Montgomery holding Elias Lindholm back and not making him that type of play driver. He hasn't been that for a while now. So maybe it's fair to fire Jim Montgomery, but there's some pretty significant personnel issues. And, Lindholm and Zadorov, as much as there's the Bring Zadorov Home movement growing, thanks to Elliot Friedman here in Vancouver, he's been a major problem for them as well.
Well, and it seems like in the offseason, they just looked at their depth chart and they're like, well, we need a center, so Elias Lindholm's the best one available, and we need a defenseman. We like big defensemen, so Nikita Zadorov's the best of those guys. And they didn't really give a lot of thought to how that would actually play out, because I think, as we saw here in Vancouver, I think Elias Lindholm is a very valuable player.
Yes.
He can certainly provide a lot in very subtle ways. He's not going to be someone who just manufactures offense himself or creates for others, and certainly not someone who's going to play up tempo and speed you up. And so we've seen that from him here. Zadorov, they brought him in with the intention to play him with Charlie McAvoy on the top pair, and then immediately I was reading all this stuff about how Charlie McAvoy was yeah, this guy's wild, way too unpredictable. I have no idea where he's going to be, what he's going to do. He's taking a million minor penalties, and so he quickly got demoted to the third pair. And so it was all good in terms of like putting names on paper,
yeah.
but they didn't really actually give a lot of thought to like, all right, how are we going to actually use these guys considering their skill sets?
Well, one of the things I heard Elliot Friedman say with Halford and Brough this morning is that the Bruins like don't like how much Zadorov likes to carry the puck. And, like, yeah. It's like, well, it's why like, did you sign him then?
Yeah.
The whole idea of signing him to that contract is like, we're going to lean into him carrying the puck and use him as a top four guy who can do that. Not be like, oh my God, Zadorov's taking chances with the puck. Like, why did you sign him? Did you scout him before?
He carries the puck. He takes penalties. And quite frankly, he's got a bit too big of a personality. It's like, all right, these are literally the only three things he does.
Okay.
They're blindsided by that.
Buying or selling on this player comp, because I dropped it on Jamie during the break. And he loved it. And I think he wasn't lying to me.
I think he lies to you a lot just to get through today.
I liked it.
He does yeah, he does lie to me sometimes.
It's a survival mechanism.
He does lie to me
mostly about your parlays, where I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Stop talking about it. That's awesome.
Wow, you nailed that one. Good job.
Okay.
Another home run.
Okay. I get it. Anyway. Player comp. Ready?
Yep.
Nikita Zadorov. Is NHL Jameis Winston.
Oh. Yeah.
That is nail on the head.
I like it.
Give me credit.
I do like it. The big plays, the mistakes, the personality.
The quotes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess he's had more meaningful success from the perspective of like last year's playoff run
sure.
was more meaningful than anything Jameis Winston's done at the NFL level.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of just like
vibes.
The character, vibes,
yeah.
big plays,
well, and also like
ones for sure.
Yeah. Jameis as...
I want to watch anytime he's playing.
Yeah.
Jameis as, you know, backup, like a really qualified backup is great. Jameis as your no doubt about a starter.
No, still great.
No.
You're
but
wrong.
Not for winning. Where And
no,
I think it's
no,
the same thing
right,
with Zadorov. Where if Zadorov is like your overqualified third pairing guy who can carry the puck, it's like, yeah. hey, that's awesome. But if you're
paying him $5 million.
Paying him $5 million to be a top four mainstay, it's like, it's not great.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that's the big similarity as well.
There's, man, we watch so many bad quarterbacks, though. Like Jameis Winston rocks. Anyway, okay, let's move on from Zadorov in Boston. I think they're going to have a new coach bump here, and
well,
then we'll see if the Black Magic carries or not.
One final point on that. I know that the Canucks are part of that schedule, but from a timing perspective, I think the reason why they did it is to give their interim coach a chance to actually succeed. Because if
yes.
you look at the Bruins' schedule, they played Utah yesterday, and they were really no match for them. And then they play like Chicago, Montreal, Philly.
They won,
though. Teams. No, they did.
Yeah,
but I think this was definitely the right time to do so, because if the schedule was a bit tougher, I don't think we'd see that much of a turnaround.
Really. Right. Well, and I honestly think, too, if you're going to do it, if you think you have to do it to give your team a lift, doing it now as opposed to
yeah.
in 2 weeks matters a ton. You don't have enough time in 2 weeks.
Especially with the state of the Atlantic Division, right? Like, they're
yeah.
hovering around a playoff spot despite being sub 500.
Yeah,
so.
This is the time to do it. Teams
yeah.
should actually be more aggressive, I think, firing coaches early. Because we see it all the time. Like, you do it in December or mid-December, and the coach makes the team hot. You get the new coach bump,
short.
And then it doesn't even matter.
Yeah,
I'm stunned that Jim Montgomery still doesn't have a job. I purely assume that that's him wanting a few days off.
You think he'll have a job, like, immediately?
I just can't believe that Detroit or Anaheim haven't hired him yet, to
right.
be honest.
Yeah.
Detroit, especially.
No, Anaheim, especially.
Well, Anaheim, but the Greg Cronin stuff has been
yes,
bleak.
But I don't think Anaheim has any designs of making the playoffs, whereas Detroit does.
No, but he's
right?
he's thought of as a player's coach that everyone likes.
He's
and
exactly
I feel like just bringing him in is like almost a more tactical Bruce Boudreaux. Like, I'm in.
And he'll have immediate buy-in. He's Troy Terry's university coach.
Right.
Like, he's literally got an ingrained relationship
yeah.
with their best player. Like, what are we... Anaheim is the team that should have hired him yesterday.
I think they will.
Yeah, I think
I
they
think
will,
I think he
too.
Wants a bit of time off, but I think he will.
Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
That's a nice position to be in. I'll come work for you, but
I want
me have Christmas first.
I want a little bit of time off before I move to Newport Beach
yeah.
and take on a zero-pressure job with a ton of young talent on the roster, where the impact of average coaching will be worth 15 points the day I arrive.
Yeah, he's like, listen, fantasy football playoffs are around the corner. I really want to focus on that for a couple weeks, but check back in with me first week of January.
Once I figure out what I'm going to do with Devontae Smith out,
oh, wait,
I'm there.
Wait, that's just us.
Yeah, that is just us. So then the Canucks face the Penguins.
Yep.
And I don't think we have to talk about them.
I don't think we have to talk about them that much. I think we all know the score.
In fact,
Penguins
I suggest
here.
We shouldn't.
Yeah.
Okay, let me...
I do want to talk about the Sabres, though, because...
Well, will we not have a show
no.
before then?
Well... I guess we could have Dim on Thursday, but we don't have...
I'm not in on Thursday.
Well, there you go. So
that,
that Sabres game is noon.
Yeah.
We're off.
What do you mean we're off? They're going to schedule us for like...
No, I've already confirmed it with Barrow. We're off.
What?
5-day weekend.
Oh, man.
Oh, man.
Tom, you're going to be here in studio watching all the matinee hockey with me on Friday anyways.
Yeah, that's true. And at noon, Kansas City Raiders, baby.
Yeah, but I'm not working. So, no, we Buffalo, we will not talk to Dim before that Buffalo game.
Point is, let's talk Buffalo. Buffalo is the Senators. I don't think there's a ton of difference at this point.
Probably not. You would have hoped that they'd be ahead of them based on
talent.
Talent, but also seeing it from them 2 years ago. You would have expected by now they would have taken that next step, and they haven't. They're kind of stuck to where the Senators have joined them now, and the standings even reflect that. So I think it's disappointing. I don't know, man. I watched that game. What was it, Wednesday night? It was Sabres in LA, and it was like 1-0, and neither team was doing anything. And I was like, this is
bleak, bad.
Yeah, it was truly one of the most sad games I've watched this season. And so, I don't know. They're winning some games, but they're not doing it in a fashion that makes me feel confident that they're going to be the team we hope they'd be. And so maybe that's a personal bias, but I find that disappointing.
How's Zach Benson doing?
He's been good since he came back. He missed a significant period of time. He's doing Zach Benson stuff. Everyone hates him. He's incredibly annoying. He's just living in front of the net.
Yep.
He just never stops talking or skating. And so, yeah, he's a joy to watch.
I want to, before we move on entirely from the Penguins, with the Canucks on the East Coast, there's a couple of Atlantic Division defenders whose names are sort of up there in the rumor mill. Obviously, Marcus Pettersson, Mike Matheson is another one. Bowen Byram is kind of another one, too. If you're the Canucks and you're shopping for a defender, you watch this Canucks team closely. You watch the league closer than anyone I know. What type of defender would you choose for the Canucks to target? And like from a having fun watching, what Canucks defender could the team bring in that you would be like, that's sick, and I can't wait to watch that, and I think it'll make the team better? And do any of the constantly rumored names pique your interest as a fit?
I don't know if Marcus Pettersson is the answer to that question. I think he's a good defender, and I think he'd make them better from a pure like talent perspective in terms of just having another good defender, which they need. Stylistically, though, he's not a facilitator or someone who's going to initiate transition or like he's a fine enough first pass guy, but that's not really what he wants to do. Like, he wants to bump the puck to his partner and let them initiate that. And he gets to do that with Erik Karlsson right now. The issue is that if you bring him in on this Canucks team and he's playing on the second pair, I don't really see who that's going to be with. And so I think he's going to be quite limited and not necessarily provide a solution to the problem the Canucks have right now.
What if you played Brännström on his offside with him?
But part of the appeal of bringing in Marcus Pettersson is him soaking up tough minutes.
So
and I don't know if Brännström would succeed in that.
So
it's kind of a tricky situation. Now, the problem is, to answer your initial question, the type of defender that would fit that bill is just someone who's generally not available, especially in season. And so I'm not like Mike Matheson would increase their entertainment value. I don't think he's very good. And he makes a ton of mistakes, and he's immediately going to be in Rick Tocchet's doghouse. And so I don't see that. Bowen Byram, I'm not sure the Canucks really have the appetite or the pieces to acquire him. And so I'm not sure what the solution is here.
Mike Matheson's one of those where it would either be perfect because Matheson cuts down on his mistakes and you're like, wow, this is the Mike Matheson we always wanted, or he'd never play. And it's truly as boom or bust an acquisition as you could bring in.
Yeah. And I think he's been in the league long enough that the answer is probably he's not going to play.
Yeah. Yeah. I hate that because I like the person and the player, but I think you're right.
It's just once you're in Rick Tocchet's doghouse, as we've seen, it's pretty tough to get out. So it almost feels like it would be like a first 5 games thing. You know what I mean? How does it go? And if it goes well, it's like, okay, you've got a chance to keep playing. And if it doesn't, you're hooped.
Yeah.
A little bit, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what happened with Daniel Sprong?
Well, for sure. I mean, Daniel Sprung, they got to a point where they were like, not only is he not going to get a chance to play with Besser out, we're never going to give him a chance to play so we can give him away.
Yeah.
That's a tough spot to be in.
All right.
What are we going to draft?
What are we drafting here?
Well, there's lots of stuff we could draft.
So true.
That's a great point.
Is it time? Should we pull out a silly one?
Yeah, it's been a while.
I think we can do a silly one.
We've been actually doing hockey-themed stuff for too many weeks now.
Yeah. It's time. It's time to do a silly one.
Okay. I feel like you've got something on deck here.
You're ready. I hope so. That is a faulty assumption.
Okay, all right. Well, let's see anyways.
But let's talk it out. Let's buy some time.
Yes.
Should we draft things that we should draft?
Well, I've always wanted to do a draft.
Yeah. I don't think this is the time. I don't think the time is right for that.
Why?
I think we have to save that.
Okay. So a draft of drafts will wait.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to think of like stupid references we've made on the show this week.
Yeah.
A lot of Price is Right talk.
Yeah.
There's something there.
Do you know numbers, Price is Right well?
Numbers going up and down.
I know numbers going up and down.
How about things to do when you call in sick?
Sick. Yeah. Or like,
because that's what Price is Right really is. Okay.
And especially like from school.
From school.
Specifically. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like if you're a child.
Yeah. Like before you have a driver's license, you can just like go anywhere you want.
Well, I'm not going anywhere I want when I'm sick.
But like, you could.
Like Shoppers? That's the only place I'm going when I'm sick. There's two places that I go when I'm sick.
Solly's.
Okay.
And it's Shoppers Drug Mart and the Pho restaurant.
Okay. So we're doing sick day activities.
Sick day activities.
Sick day activities. Okay.
And we'll give Dimitri first pick.
All right.
Oh, do I have to? I don't want to take first pick. I feel like the value here is for me to have the snake pick.
Okay. You can have the snake pick. Jamie. You go first.
I got to go with The Price is Right.
Watching The Price is Right.
It's the GOAT sick day activity.
You're right.
What is it? It came out at like 10? Perfect. You're settled in on the couch. You got your like crackers and your toast and everything. And there you go. Price is Right. You hope it's a Plinko day.
You're eating crackers and toast?
That is a weird combo, man.
No, like whatever. But like,
mix in just a vegetable once, Jamie. Jesus.
No, when you're sick, it's just like you eat the stuff that's like really easy for your stomach
to digest. No, but this isn't actually being sick, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Oh,
I mean, it could be either one.
Yeah, it's either one. You got away with it. Mine is new video game. Don't care what type of video game it is. New video game. Could be a new computer game, but it's a new video game. That's the best thing to do when you're sick.
Nice. Okay, I'm gonna go with mine being purely fake sick. Okay. Because when I'm actually sick, I'm a big baby.
Yeah, me too.
The ultimate man cold. So I just say
mine
nothing.
Would just be sleeping, lying horizontally somewhere.
I just do nothing when I'm sick. So the first, and this is right now or like when you were
I would
like
go
when
you were a child.
Yeah.
Go to the movies.
That's a good one. Yeah, midday movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like you won't be seen there. You're sitting in the dark.
Yeah.
Honestly, matinee movies, by the way, especially solo ones. I don't know if you guys or any of your listeners go. But it's an elite activity.
You just get to sit
in solitude.
I'm a big movie by myself guy.
Oh, it's amazing.
I don't have the chance a lot anymore with kids and everything, but yeah, no, it's a good time.
I'm not a movie by myself guy. It always makes me feel like a loner. I feel uncool.
What do you got against loners?
No.
What do you got against uncool? What do you got against uncool loners?
A solo matinee, you sit down, there's like a guy sitting like six seats away from you. You kind of just like give a nod of like respect.
I only ever did it once. I went to a Blue Jays nooner, and then on my bike ride home, having had a few beers, I stopped and I watched Mad Max Fury Road the day it came out in theaters.
That sounds pretty good.
Like, oh, no. That was like one of my best days ever. That's the only time I've ever done it. And maybe I don't want to do it because I don't want to mess with that perfect experience. Anyway.
You have two.
All right. My second one is going to the mall.
Sure.
That's something I used to do. I feel like that. I don't know if kids are still doing that.
Do kids still go to the mall?
I have no idea.
If we have any young listeners, text in.
No. No one. People order stuff off the internet.
That's true. But when I was a kid, I used to love going to the mall.
Yeah, fair. Okay, cool. So movies and mall. You're getting out.
I like it. You're getting out.
Well, because
getting out and about. Because he's fake.
It's fake sick.
He's fake.
He's lying.
I'm doing nothing when I'm actually sick.
Fair enough. And so I have new video game, and I'm going to go for my second pick with make mac and cheese.
Mm.
Whenever I was fake sick or sick, as a child especially, what I really wanted to do was make mac and cheese. There's only like three things I could make myself, but I could make mac and cheese myself. I often did it.
That was the thing I made the most at home when I was like, I'm 13 years old and I'm home and everyone is out. I guess I'll make some mac and cheese. That's all I can do to take care of myself. I'm going to stick with the theme of lying on the couch and watching TV. I'm going to go with soap operas.
Ooh.
Not a big soap opera guy.
No,
but
I love it.
You're home and you're like, I'm going to see what this is about. Yeah. I'm going to see what the hype is about.
And
what's going on here?
You just get sucked in and you watch eight straight episodes.
Yeah. What's going on with Victor these days?
Wow, Young and the Restless reference. Bro, everyone knows your references are
sick.
Yeah,
you have the sickest references.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So I'll go with watching Young and the Restless.
Y and the R.
It's still on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I assume so.
And then, was your grandma a Young and the Restless grandma or a Coronation Street grandma?
Coronation Street.
Yeah.
Coronation Street. For sure.
Did they tell you they liked Coronation Street more because the people weren't all necessarily sexy?
No, they didn't tell me that, but maybe it was implied.
I had one grandma who was a Coronation Street grandma and one who was a Y and the R grandma, and they'd like argue about the benefits of them. And that was always, Y and the R is too glitzy. They're all too good looking.
All right. I think we all have two. I don't know if we have another round in us here.
I don't know.
Fair enough. I had one more.
I'm sure you've got a lot. You can do a bonus pick. This can be like the Major League Baseball draft where you can keep drafting as long as you want.
I was genuinely very sick when in 1998,
oh my God,
when the U.S. Got involved in Kosovo.
Okay.
And I spent an entire week watching CNN's war coverage.
Nice.
From the Balkans. And I remember it fondly. Like, obviously, don't remember the conflict fondly, but I just remember being, like, really into it and, like, reading a lot. And so watching the news.
You know what one I have, actually, is, like, watching your VHS collection.
Oh, yeah.
I had, like,
LA Confidential.
It would have been from, like, the late 80s, but it was, like, a Major League Baseball blooper compilation.
Mm.
And I knew it, like, beat by beat. I was like, oh, yeah, this is time. This is time for it.
Heat on the two VHS, like, where it stops midway through. That was I have some good sick day memories with Heat.
This what text comes in. Kids definitely still go to the mall. We live near Park Royal. My 11-year-old and her friends are obsessed with the mall. Well, thank you, Phil and West Van, for educating us. Apparently, the mall's still a thing that kids do. We'll end on that note. Thanks to Dim. Thanks to Ryan Johnson for joining us earlier. Have a great weekend. We're back on Monday for more Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.